entrance. Like, that's how simple-minded these fools are. You know, I was gonna give them their Rocky moment and have them come out one by one, and I guess we didn't plan enough, guys? All right, so if you read The Athletic, which is the best writing online when it comes to sports coverage, you know this gentleman right to my left. That is Murat Ateş. And then we have the dynamic duo, the number one rated sports show within this wonderful city and province, and that is The Afternoon Ride. Give it up for Huss and Rick Ralph. All right. So everybody's got their microphones in hand. So this is what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk to these guys a little bit, ask them a few questions about the Jets season, but then I'm going to come into the audience because we want to hear from you, because we know that you actually are the experts. We're just the assholes who get paid to talk about sports. So we're going to do that. So that's our game plan for this evening. So let's get right into it right now. Oh, before we start, I have to make sure that I show all these to you because they're complete awesomeness. If you go to the back where Kevin is, these are some socks and they're amazing. So they're hockey socks and they're fantastic and they work alongside the NHLPA. They're $20 a pair. This has Dale Hawerchuk's face on it and they're just unreal. There's also some great buttons. I don't know if you saw it on social media, but there's tons of little toys and Jets paraphernalia there that you'll want to take a look at. So go get some socks because, you know, apparently it's still winter out. So yeah. All right. So let's get started, guys. I think we all know that at the beginning of the season, because here we are, we're skating into game 81, if everybody can believe that. Unreal tonight against Colorado. But the fact of the matter is, at the start of the year, the Winnipeg Jets were touted as a Stanley Cup favorite. Now we come to game 81. So I want to know from you gentlemen, what do you think of that regular season? Murat, I give you the first word.
Well, how many people here read The Athletic? So you'll know that probably I was maybe a touch more skeptical about the team when the season began. I wasn't calling them flawless or anything to that effect, and there was a possibility that they were going to be easier to generate chances against. The defense wasn't quite as deep, and you can sort of see it in the heat maps. You can see it on the ice and all those sorts of things. I still thought that they'd be better than the stretch that we've seen for such a long time on paper. They're still a favorite on paper against anyone that they're likely to face in the first round. But, I mean, I think it's time for a little bit of legitimate concern, and I would share that with anybody in this room, that's for sure.
Huss, what about yourself?
Well, you ask me about the regular season. I mean, which one? I mean, there's basically been two. You know, right up until Christmas, this was, I mean, a really impressive team. Pretty much night in and night out, and you're going to have the odd game. But they had enough talent to maybe get over that and win more often than not. You know, it's been magnified in a huge way with some real duds as of late. But as, you know, Murat's talked about and we've discussed on the show before, there's been, you know, some really concerning trends of the hockey club that, you know, at times, like, the season is too long. It goes for 82 games. You can understand, you know, some lulls, if you will, at times, especially when you've got a really comfortable cushion, as the Jets did for a long time. But it's manifested itself into a situation of the team playing probably their worst hockey in a few years at the absolute worst possible time, with the Stanley Cup playoffs beginning next week. So, you know, I mean, there's so many questions. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of answers right now. I mean, the only guys that'll be able to answer them are wearing Jet jerseys, and we're going to see them on the screen at 8 o'clock tonight. So it's a very mysterious group at times. I mean, we have seen them play head-to-head, toe-to-toe with the best teams in the National Hockey League at times, and we have seen, you know, some performances that probably wouldn't beat AHL competition at the time. Just, I'm exaggerating, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, you got to show up and you got to compete, and it hasn't been enough.
And Rick?
I got curious as to how the Winnipeg Jets had some company recently with St. Louis and Nashville. So I went back and looked at the standings up until January 1st, and I was a little bit surprised at the time to find that the Winnipeg Jets, by New Year's Eve, had achieved only the third best record in the National Hockey League. Tampa and Toronto were the only hotter teams than the Winnipeg Jets going into January 1. After that, it's completely changed. And you look at up to game number 80, they've registered 44 points. Chicago's done the exact same. The Avalanche have done the same. They may be two worse. Chicago, all those teams, the Avalanche, Chicago, Dallas, maybe two better. St. Louis was the anomaly because they had achieved 60 points to the Jets' 44, but all the other teams are 42 to 46, which means everybody else has been playing kind of 500 hockey here in the Central Division, with the exception of the Blues, which is why the Jets have been caught here by Nashville and St. Louis. And it takes the last 30 games to find that Nashville caught the Jets by 6 points. That's how slow, but that also tells you how bad Nashville's been, as well as Winnipeg. But it's been a tale, as Huss says, of two halves.
So how much merit do you guys put in the fact when people speak to you, listen, any team that loses their top two defensemen, and let's face it, Dustin Byfuglien has been out for the majority of 2019 so far. So when you think about that, these are two guys who not only are playing a ton of minutes every night, they hide a lot of blemishes from the team, they also protect Hellebuck in some ways, and they really add to your special teams. They give you that extra option on the power play. So do we give them a little bit of a break, considering that Buff is finally back, and that we're looking at getting Morrissey hopefully back for the playoffs here? I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I think for that, personally, I would look to the first half of the season and see that the Jets were kind of an above-average team, but not a spectacular one at 5-on-5, and the power play and goaltending was sort of overcoming some of the fact that they weren't a juggernaut we expected them to be. And my perspective on Morrissey and Byfuglien specifically is that they do take them off of Winnipeg's defense, and it guts them. There was a top four. It was clear it was Morrissey and Trouba, but they can read, react, they can switch, they can play the man-to-man zone hybrid, and they don't make really a whole lot of mistakes together. And then you put Dustin Byfuglien with nearly anybody, and you have a second pair. Take them off. Trouba hasn't been able to float without Morrissey, and nobody can do without Byfuglien what they can do with him. Ben Chiarot is not capable of doing for Sammy Niku or whoever his new partners have been what Dustin Byfuglien can do for other people. So bring them back. Do you expect that restoration to above average? I think so. I think that's reasonable. One man in Byfuglien this week hasn't been able to do it entirely, and Josh Morrissey's still playing in that non-contact jersey, and this is getting to some pretty sketchy too little too late time, and it's a little bit concerning for
me. Can I just say with the Morrissey thing, I know when they came out they said 4 to 6 weeks, but my source said that it was 6 to 8 weeks, and they didn't expect him back for the first round. So I'm just saying. Sorry, guys. But anyways, Huss, continue on. But he's young.
Well,
these
I talked
young
to his dad.
Heal faster. Yeah, there
I
you
talked
go.
To his dad on Saturday, and Tom is not exactly going to give you information. I usually don't go through family to find out injured players. That's a Toronto thing that they do. But, and get in trouble. But Josh has been Saturday he was out for the morning skate, and he looks excellent. Now, he wasn't injured in the bottom half, right? It's a top half. So can he take a hit yet? Well, no, he can't take a hit yet. So I wouldn't be surprised he does miss the first round of the playoffs. His father didn't say that. He sounded a little more optimistic, but his dad still said that he wasn't going to be a player here before Saturday.
You know, I mean, as far as the loss of those two, I mean, obviously, they're very impactful. And I think the special teams has been damaged by them, the play in their own end. But the biggest thing, and this is how I think it's trickled down to the rest of the club and what we're seeing overall, is that those two individuals are clearly, if far and away, the best puck-moving defenseman in getting the puck out. And, you know, with having it an extra step or an extra second to actually be able to get those spots, the forwards, I think, have sort of changed the way they've played. We're not in the same spots where you need to be to quickly move the puck out. And if you look at the Jets, and even we did see a lot of that actually in the Nashville game, but when the Jets are playing their best, they're a team that is killing you with speed, they're tenacious, and the minute that puck is turned over, they're getting it going the other way. And that, to me, has been the biggest thing that's been missing. And, you know, will that change immediately when the two get back in? I mean, you hope it'll be better, but I think it's led to some other things that have crept into other areas of the game that have sort of compounded the problems of the team in the last couple months.
Hey, they were without Enstrom last year, right? Mm-hmm. Toward that second half of the season, they were missing Jacob Trouba as well. And Enstrom was a top two defenseman last year, and Trouba was a big part of the four. So, and they finished the season 11-1. It's a lot different this year. I don't give them any grace with these two out of the lineup. Buff's back last couple games, and it hasn't made any difference.
Okay. So let's talk about there when we talk about where things have crept in this year, and we can't not talk about the Jets season and not talk about Patrick Laine. So this is one of the biggest years of his career, and I've had this debate with a lot of people. Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor. Who do you give the contract to?
Both.
Because they can't do everything, right?
I don't think that... Give Sherratt Liney money, yeah. That'll fix things. So I don't think that the Jets are in that situation of where it's going to be either or for a little while. I think there's lower hanging fruit. So I'm just, I have to hedge with that. But if you're going to put me on the spot, Leah.
See, I completely disagree with you, Murat, because I do think that they're in this situation. You're looking at two RFAs right now. And the thing about it is that they have major decisions to make this year. So they have to see where their roster is going to line up. I think they have to decide they're going to have to sign them both. But right now, if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, I look at Kyle Connor. He goes up and down that lineup. He makes everybody he plays with better. He changes the game with speed. I'm giving him the longer-term contract, and right now I'm giving Line A the specialist a couple of years. So I guess maybe that's where I'm getting at with this.
I think that there's room for both players, but if you got to choose one, I think that I'm going to go with youth on this one. I'm going to go with the guy that can genuinely get you those wins above replacement, the guy who can do the hardest thing in the game and at 20 years old has scored more goals than Kyle Connor has at 22. At this stage of their career, for me, I think age has a tremendous impact on their growth, and while Kyle Connor might look better because he skates faster and there's certain parts of his game that seem to gel, the actual 5-on-5 numbers this year are that Nick Ehlers is the only guy who can work with Scheifele and Wheeler. Nobody, even Kyle Connor, despite what Paul Maurice has been saying lately, can make that first line hum on that wing.
All right, boys.
I'll echo it. I mean, I think you do everything you can. I mean, players like that are the blueprint of long-term success. So, I mean, if you have to get rid of other players to make sure you keep them both, you do that. And to be frank, I think with the season that Patrick Laine's had this year, if I'm his agent, I'm not interested in doing a long-term contract right now because I think the timing's terrible for it. I mean, I think they go for, you know, a bridge deal for 2 years and then they revisit it, hopefully coming off a couple 40-goal seasons, and then he's able to get his long-term deal at the money that he probably thinks that he could be.
Yeah. And Rick, if he does well in the playoffs, though, does this erase everything?
No, I'm still giving him a bridge deal because he's a streaky guy, right? Most of his goals came in November. This troubles me, though. This is from, so you recall them going into Montreal and how that game went. So Sammy Hoffman, who's a Finnish reporter, works out of Toronto. He goes to Montreal to speak to Laine in Finnish. And this is the quote from Laine. Now, keep in mind, he's in the middle of his big 15-game streak where he's not scoring. There have been games where I didn't have any interest in playing. Just didn't feel right. And when that happens, it seems nothing goes your way. And to me, the body language, and again, he's a young guy, but that 15-goalist drought was awful to watch him play through. He's an absolute disaster in his own zone. And I know he's really good offensively, but we're into another streak now where he hasn't scored. He's got one, and it's tough to watch for this kid because the first 2 years, quite frankly, look very promising. Maybe this is a bad year for him, but it's going to cost him, I think, financially, because if they give him anything more than a 2-year deal, I think they're gambling.
I know we love to live in the present and, you know, just what happened in the last game or what's happened in the last 2 weeks, and it's part of the reason why everyone's freaked out right now, but let's not forget 36 goals as a rookie, 44 goals last year. He didn't all of a sudden become a bad player.
He has a little bit this year.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to add something about Laine.
I mean, is Mark Scheifele a terrible player right now?
Yeah. Well, yes.
He hasn't looked very good.
So I don't necessarily trust Patrick Laine 100% in his own zone to know how to cover and how to switch. But if you watch him play with Scheifele and Wheeler is what happened for a little while, and you count who makes it to the Jets' blue line back first, you would be surprised at how often it is Patrick Laine in that case. And that's some video that I've done. And that might be a compliment to Laine. It might be an indictment of the other
That's
two
great players. If he's getting into his own zone, but what's he doing when he gets there?
Can a 20-year-old learn those
And don't
things?
We just want him in
well,
the
I'm
offensive
so,
zone
yes.
all the time anyways? Okay.
Hell, and while we're talking about the dynamic duo, I mean, how's that gone with the top two since Laine's been off the line? I mean, Wheeler was scoring on a tap-in every game or every second game for a while, honestly. That's kind of dried up as well. So there's
Would you
more
guys
to
split
it,
up Scheifele and Wheeler? There's been a lot
yes.
of talk about that. Whoa! Okay! So apparently, yes. But if you split them up, okay, so you already know what you're going to get from them. I get that it's dried up a little bit now, but they have been very productive over the years when they've been playing together, no matter who you put on that line. But if you do split them up, who are you splitting them up to play with?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what, Kevin Hayes is here now, so I mean, the situation's a little different, but I was kind of really surprised that at some point, I mean, Brian Little had a lot of success for a long time with Blake Wheeler. Mark Scheifele's established himself as a star in the National Hockey League. To think that it was out of the question to ever, they've literally tried every single line combination. I think we're going to get three new ones tonight. The only thing that has never changed this year is that 55 and 26 have played together. I know they love to play each other all the time, but sometimes for the betterment of the team, you have to maybe think of some of the options. That was the option. I was really surprised that it didn't get at least touched upon for a game or two at some point when things were going well.
Yeah, it would be so valuable to have that information about what works now. And when they were banking points and running that third best NHL record for the first half of the season, I think that might have been the time to mix it up so you would have that influence. But let's use something that's working well or usually works well to sort of, this is what guides my thought process. The power play works because it has options, right? You have Scheifele as an option. You have Byfuglien, who should be back on the point in the top unit. You have him as an option, and then you have Patrick Laine as an option. And if as a defense, you have to realistically respect one thing, the other one's going to be open. And I think for the Winnipeg Jets, there's no variety when you see 55 and 26 alongside each other for the entirety of the season. Even if it's not what you go with when the chips are down and it's game one of the first round, to give defenses something else to look at instead of what we've seen so much would be, I think, an advantage for the Jets.
All right. I've heard what these
Wait
guys
Wait a minute.
Have. All right. Continue, Rick.
Well, I'll go back to your question about why splitting up these two. And it's kind of hard to split two people up if they don't want to be split up. And I don't have
coaches
that.
For.
I don't have that 100%. Yeah, but even coaches can be swayed.
And the coaches have said that the biggest people who will be upset is 26 and 55, and they're not willing to do that.
Well, 26, I'll go back to last year, and it's something I said on the radio as well. I thought that maybe the Winnipeg Jets were a little bit concerned with Mark Scheifele's compete level on an offensive side. So maybe he was cheating the zone a little bit. Maybe he had worked out with Roberts in the summer. McDavid's there. Stamkos is there. And he blends with those people, and we all know how competitive he is. So a points thing is a big deal for Mark Scheifele. If he's not playing well, he's not scoring points. He's driven. That's what makes him a good hockey player. Blake Wheeler, to me, is the same thing, that he's driven. If he's not performing well, he's not scoring points. Something I noticed in the first couple of years when he was here while I was doing the post-game show, and he'd come in and be a guest, especially in the first 2 years. That's about as far as I'll go with that, but they're similar players. They have the same drive. They don't want to be separated, I don't think, because one feeds the other, and the two of them have the same goal. That's not to say that their goal is different than a lot of the others, but theirs is really highly offensive. And I think you can get into a coach's head. If the coach wants to put another player on that line, they might even have enough pull to go, you know what, coach, I don't know that we want him on our line, or we want this guy, or we want that guy. And I don't know that that exactly exists, but you know that it does exist with veteran players.
I'm going to say it exists. I'm going to say this. All right, I'm out here. Who wants to talk? Who has, hands, I love it. All right, sir. So this is how we do this. You're going to say your name. You're going to smile. You're going to tell me how wonderful I am. And then you're going to ask them a question. No, I'm just kidding. Stand up, sir, if you don't mind, and just boot out here so the boys can see you. Just come here. I don't bite, I promise, unless you want me to. So, okay. So here we go. So the gentlemen are up here. And
she is a hex doll.
Hey, if Brad Marchand can do it, why can't I? He still plays. All right, sir, what's your name?
No licking.
No licking.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Brad Mundy, and I'm an Athletic subscriber.
Woo! Yeah. Love that. What's your question, sir?
Okay, one of the things I've noticed on the power play is that we don't seem to have a really good presence in front of the net, blocking the eyes of the goalie. Is there some idea of putting another one of the players of the Jets in there somehow that can do that?
Yeah, I would be 100%, and thank you for subscribing and for your question, and yeah, all of those things. I'm 100% on Team Kevin Hayes at the side of the net. He's a left-handed shot just like Kyle Connor is. He's a terrific playmaker. You can count on him for those passes, and he's a very, very big man as well. So, I mean, taking away the eyes is definitely a thing. The Jets power play did it, and occasionally still does add wrinkles with Kyle Connor sneaking across the net front. There's been some moves. He drives the net. He creates offense, and that works when it happens. I don't necessarily think it happens often enough, personally. And I think Kevin Hayes would be the solution that addresses both of those things and then gets you Kyle Connor, a good shooter, on your second unit as well. So that's kind of where I'm leaning with that.
I mean, the Jet power play at times has been absolutely lethal, and I understand why they keep on trying to go back to what has been successful in the past. But, I mean, I have to agree. I mean, whether it's a tweak of personnel, and we have seen, you know, at times, excuse me, Jack Rossovic popping in there. And of course, you mentioned the potential of Kevin Hayes. The biggest thing is the player movement. I mean, it was a couple games ago, and it's escaping which one. Jets had 2 minutes of solid zone time without really much going on. It was basically just back Wheeler to Trouba. They certainly know that they want to get it to Line A, but it's taken out a lot of Mark Scheifele's lethalness in the middle because he's essentially stationary for a long time, and they're just having a guy on that. So I'm surprised, actually, we haven't seen maybe a few more tweaks, especially during this past couple months about it, because at times recently, I mean, to be honest, especially since Bufflin's been back and been with the second unit, we've seen far more dynamic puck and player movement in the second unit than we've seen in power play number one.
Power play number one, to me, it's always on the right side. Predominantly, you've got right-handed shooters all on the power play, the first unit. So it's predictable now on the right side. The puck is going to go down deep low. It's going to go to Wheeler. They're going to put Scheifele in front for one option. Now it's Trouba on the point, and you got Laine on the far side. So if you're an opposing team, and we've seen this, I think, as of lately, they're going to collapse the box. They're going to allow Trouba to have the shot, and it's worked a little bit. So now you hear coach go, well, we like Trouba on the first unit because it seems to be working. Well, they're giving him the shot because they're taking away Scheifele, and they're taking away the pass from Wheeler. Wheeler's trying to thread needles through to Laine. It's incumbent on Laine, and you'll see if you watch him on the power play unit, he'll go down to the circle, he'll come back up to the top of the circle. He'll go down to the circle, he'll come back up. He's trying to work with Wheeler, to me, to get that opening. But Wheeler will look, and he can't find it. He might have to throw it back to Trouba, who's then going to throw it back to Wheeler, and they're going to reload. Or Wheeler will do a 360 if he feels pressure and look for the pass again. It's tough to me. It's become predictable. And now, having said that, Washington seems to do the thing all at the same time, and it works for whatever reason with Ovechkin on the other side. But teams are, I think, collapsing the box on the Jets now, and they're having success better. Having said that, the power play is still running fourth best in the league, and it's predominantly that first unit. Maybe it has a little bit of relax, but I looked even at the numbers at the half. They were running, I think, at 37, 38%. Now they're at 36. So it's still working predominantly.
You know what? I don't know what you think about this. I mean, the loss at Bufflin, I find it really magnified on the power play, and that, you know, they worked with Jacob Trouba, they've worked with Josh Morrissey before, and both, you know, really talented players, but do not command the respect of the shot that Dustin Bufflin does, and it allows the box to come and cave in closer to the net, and that to me is the thing. Like, Mark Scheifele simply has no space right now in that area, and they're able to box it down, and it isn't until you get a little bit of that movement and he has a step or two that instead of ripping it over to Line A, they can do that short pass, which we have seen work at times. There just hasn't been enough space for Scheifele, and I think a lot of that has to do with the respect for that shot coming back from the point.
100% agree with you there. I think the Jets' power play is about time and space, and they lose and waste time with Trouba on the point relative to Bufflin. That decision, whether it's going across to Laine or back to Wheeler, I think, in my opinion, has to happen faster. And then what you said in terms of collapsing on Scheifele, I mean, if you're just going to play the odds of who the most dangerous threats are, Scheifele scores at about a quarter of the shots he gets from the center slot on the power play. Laine scores on something like 1 in 5, and then from the point, the odds go way down. So if you're a defense playing the Jets power play, you want to give up that top shot, even if it's Bufflin, but even more so if it's Trouba or somebody else. So that does make sense to me. I still think that Laine scans that lane pretty well, and I still think that that is working reasonably well. If you want to indulge a pet theory, if anybody remembers, I guess it would be Salt Lake City 2002. Was it Aginla who let it go through his legs to Lemieux, or Lemieux who let it go through his legs?
Okay, enough. Gotta enough.
The greatest non-assist of all time.
We're going down a rabbit hole right now. Okay.
I've hit my head a couple of times in the last few years, okay? I don't remember these things. But I'm saying that I think Scheifele can dummy for Laine a couple of times if Laine wants to sneak in as well, because he's eating that one-on-one.
Okay, boys, Scheifele's
shooting percentage, I think, is 19% right now, which, to me, you're giving him the puck more. Maybe he's not getting the opportunities.
Okay, who has a question? I heard someone over here's question. You know what you got to do? You got to come up and come out. Here we go. All right. So say your name.
Ryan Face.
Okay, and go for it, Ryan.
So there's a lot of concern with power play, but it's fourth in the league. How about the penalty kill? That's 24th. How do you fix it?
Look at, they're speechless.
I mean, penalty killing, when it comes down to it, there's a lot of things that are involved. I mean, goaltending is the number one thing, and I think that, you know, certainly, I mean, we'll get into that, I'm sure. I mean, I think Hellebuck's been far better. Certainly the numbers will tell you that he's been far better kind of late February through March going forward. But the cohesive unit and the speed and the tenacity that the Jets are able to, you know, get onto the puck has been lacking a little bit. And to be honest, it seemingly has gotten worse, where they have been, you know, at times when things aren't going well, I mean, just basically too passive a box. I mean, I think that's the easiest way for me to describe it. And we haven't seen that at times against the Winnipeg Jets. But, you know, the ability at a certain point, you know, if you are aggressive in when you're killing penalties, you may open yourself up to, you know, some other opportunities that can kill you. But at the same time, you know, I think it's important to be, you know, tenacious and be on the puck more than the team has had. I mean, you know, it's a pretty simple answer for it. I mean, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, oh, their structure's all wrong. It's essentially, penalty killing is pretty simple. It's hard work. It's having good sticks. And, you know, it hasn't been good enough. And that is another one of those things that's trended poorly.
I think three things have changed since about a year ago at this time on the Jets penalty kill. Number one, entry defense is a lot worse. So Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele needed minutes shaved off of their role. They pressured entries way further up the ice than other Jets pairings, and they prevented entries more. Winnipeg spent less time in its own zone. A second thing that's happened is math has caught up to the Winnipeg Jets. They were, a year ago, letting the most shots per minute, the most shot attempts per minute, the most quality chances per minute at 4-on-5 in, like, the last 10 years. And it was because they were so passive, and they want to give you that shot from the top of the circle for free because Hellebuck has less ground to cover. When there are that many shots, eventually some go in. I think math caught up there. And then mid-season, the Jets actually made an adjustment on their penalty kill this year. They've given the forwards more room to be pressuring, and they're not quite as passive as they used to be. And they've been getting beat for seam passes by volume in ways that they haven't, like a year ago they weren't. So I think that it is bad and will stay bad. That's...
I can't add much more to what Marat said, but having a look at some of the high danger opportunities, and this is 5-on-5 and on the penalty kill. Last year they were third in the league, and this year they're in the bottom third of the league, and that expends. So to me, the penalty kill is just a product of their overall defense, and kind of what Huss got to as well, is it's pressure, but it has slipped enormously this year. And part of it too is the goaltending, but the goaltending's facing higher danger opportunities from the opposition more than they did last year.
All right, I'm here at the back. This gentleman was at our last one that we did in the fall, just so everybody knows. We had our picture taken together. We might be in love. We don't know.
It's the Christmas card.
We haven't decided yet. Yeah, all right. Name and question, please, sir.
Are we in love? No. My name's Craig Neufeldt, Athletic subscriber. This question is directed more at Murat. With Tyler Dello just signing with the Devils, if the Jets offered you a position somewhat like that, would you take it? Would you decline it? We need you at the Athletic.
Wow, good question.
I am not gonna lie to you.
I think the funny part is that anytime we've asked the coaching staff about, anytime I've asked Maurice about analytics, he goes on about it with the department they have, yet I don't know who the department is. So do you know who it is?
No, those would be
the concussion spotters. They're in the basement. And the analytics department are the people I haven't met yet.
Yeah, they contract Sport Logic or what have you, and they have a package that they buy from them. They look at certain sequences, and then they have a team of, I think it's two, three, or maybe even four. It's definitely two guys that I've spoken to for sure who interpret that data and then communicate that to the coaching staff. To your question, with New Jersey's huge investment in analytics and what Toronto may have done recently as well, and some of the other networks around the league, I don't think that I don't think that Winnipeg is ahead of the curve by any stretch on this front. I think they're aware of things. When I talk to Paul Maurice, he has a vocabulary for it, for sure. But I don't think that this is influencing decision-making in a big way for that team.
Funniest thing I saw on Twitter today was they were wondering with Dello going from the Athletic to a Jersey, if Jersey was getting 40% off his first year.
Oh, geez. All right. Get up, sir. Name and question.
All right. My name is Reed Peters. I was also at last year's. Also in love with Leah. Yes, also in love with Leah. Okay, Craig is my best buddy. We have this bet for next regular season. I'm betting against Line A that he's going to be a top 10 goal scorer in the league. $100 on it. So what do you guys think on that?
I love
Huss bets. Is like, do I get a piece
betting.
Of the action?
Yeah, the Jets are on the betting suspended list right now, so I can't tell you. I mean, hey, you what? 44 goals as a 19-year-old, which was second in the league? I certainly think there's a potential you lose that bet. Certainly, I think most Jet fans would hope that you do. But we're going to need to see more. And talking about the bigger picture of what's ailing the Winnipeg Jets right now, finding a line and a connection that consistently works for him is, honestly, it was right up at the top of the to-do list long-term for the Winnipeg Jets if Patrick Laine is going to be here for a long time.
Yeah, I think it depends if he's up on the front line. If he's up on that front line, then yeah, you probably do lose the bet. If he's not, then I kind of echo with Huss, like, who is playing with him? They've tried a lot of people. Even Kevin Hayes was brought in here, a left shot. Even coach said it. You got a right shot line, and we're going to put him back on the right side because that's where we feel he's done his best work. Well, why do you have him on the left side then? But they have him on the right side, and you got Hayes now, the left shot. And yet that hasn't worked. And is it Line A who can't find where he should be for Hayes? I don't know, but they got to find somebody that he can play with, or he's going to have to figure out how to play with some others. But they've said the same thing for years in Pittsburgh, trying to find people to play with Crosby, and it hasn't been easy.
Yeah, but Murat, that being said, too, about the power play, I mean, that bet could hinge on how many power plays the Jets get next season, because, I mean, last year he was second to Alexander Ovechkin in power play goals, and that's where he makes his money. So that's such a big part of his game.
I think a healthy Patrick Laine is in the top 10 of goal scoring next year for sure. I think that what we're seeing is slumping and bad luck and all this other like crap that's happened to him. I'm a pretty confident guy that at this stage of his career, again, going to play the age card one more time. But what I think Patrick Laine needs to figure out is if he's going to play in tight to that cycle or if he's going to play into soft ice. And I don't think he's figured out quite what he's doing on that role yet. And that's maybe why some folks like Kyle Connor a little bit more alongside Scheifele and Wheeler is because he finds softer ice a little bit closer as well. But when you have that kind of shooting talent, the goal should be to exploit it in every possible way. And I think that that's what I see for Laine's future, and he's going to figure that out. And I think that top 10 is a pretty safe bet.
Well, you guys will have to report back who gets the hundy. All right, we're moving on. Sir, name and question.
Cassidy Dankochik. My question is related to Blake Wheeler. He's been the most infuriating player for me this year. Just along the half wall, his stumbles and fumbles, but then he seems to make a play. So my question is Wheeler the smartest dumb player in the NHL or the dumbest smart player in the NHL?
Oh, we love our
I think he's a college graduate, isn't he, down there south of the border? I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time criticizing a guy that's put up 90 points this year. I just don't know how it's going to be sustainable going ahead. I don't think he's stupid, or he wouldn't have been into school, but that's debatable, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, and these are questions that I don't think we can answer. The biggest questions about Blake Wheeler are not what, he's doing on the ice. I mean, the guy does lead by example. He busts his ass. I think there's questions right now just about the team, the chemistry and honestly, the leadership group of this group and how they're helping along some of the younger players, a Patrick Laine like that. I mean, we talked about this, I think, yesterday on the show. I mean, I still... wonder, I mean, I don't know if any of you guys were listening. I mean, during the trade deadline day, I was live on the air when Michael Remus told me that Matt Hendricks was acquired by the Jets in a trade. And I straight up thought he was joking and asked if there was a blue check mark.
You didn't say anything, actually, because I was listening and there was dead silence on the radio. There's a 3-second rule. Normally it'll set off an alarm in the building, then an engineer comes running. But there was absolute silence. I looked at my radio to see if it was still on.
Then confirmation of the blue check mark. But, you know, and you wonder. I mean, there's a lot. He's an incredibly intense player, and he has been the driver of this club. And I'll give him, I mean, a lot of credit. Even before he became the captain, he was the logical next choice to do it. How that's handled it, and, you know, and it's a challenging job, especially with such a young team. And I mean, I'm not one that dwells on the age of the players and, you know, how many young players, but for that sort of culture inside a locker room, playing together for each other, it's really, really important to, you know, have everyone pulling on that same group. And, you know, at times it seems like maybe the top dogs are maybe a little detached from some of the players. So, I mean, on the ice, I mean, listen, that guy can play for me any day and play a lot.
Who, Hendricks?
Yeah.
Okay, so just hang on a second here.
Hendricks is the director of morale. He can be in the room or whatever.
Yeah, to touch on what Hess is saying, he's not crazy here because I found out about the Hendricks trade before it became public, and the reason I was told is because inside the room, they went after him. They missed him this year. They went after him specifically because Blake Wheeler needed help because he wasn't able to concentrate enough on his game. So Hess is directly on point here. Word from the coaching staff of the Jets when they made the trade to me was that we miss him, we need him, we targeted him.
Well, and it's basically said that he and Scheifele asked for him.
Yeah, they did because
we need Hendricks back.
They have
something
have
I never thought I would hear.
Until Hendricks came back, they were the youngest team within the National Hockey League, and Hess is bang on. They needed him in that room. The coaches have said that room suffered this year. So, Murat, I don't know if you had a mention on that, but I just wanted to add that in to support Hess there.
Well, as the analytics guy, I think I'm supposed to say awful things about Matt Hendricks' performance and things like that, but to actually meet him and talk to him and spend that time, I'm going to say that he does do the things that they say that he does. All of, like, I was skeptical in all sincerity because every writer that I've ever read has said glowing things about Matt Hendricks and his personality, and almost becomes this weird, like, why? What could it possibly be about this? But then you meet him and you talk to him and you see the way that he genuinely does, in fact, command respect in a room, in a group, or what have you, and the way that he treats people. I'm 100% on Team Hendricks morale. I believe in that.
All right.
But does it help you win?
Well, it does if Wheeler can concentrate on his game and he doesn't have to worry about anything else because that's what we need him to do. But anyways.
But Leah, I think that if I go back to what I said about Wheeler and Scheifele earlier being kind of those points-driven guys, and then you've got Ehlers and Laine who are playing video games in the room on the road, right? That's not a shot against them. They're young guys.
They wheel in television.
They're kind of on their own. Those two kind of, to me, hang out. Then you've got Lowry, you've got Kopp, you've got Morrissey, you've got some of these younger guys that are becoming this younger core group. And then you got Buff, who's a different character again altogether. And Bufflin is literally a character. When he's in the room, and not in the room, but even on a game day, in the hallway where the sticks are and the equipment where the training room is, he's back and forth. He's slapping guys. He's tripping guys. He's pushing guys. He's keeping everybody loose. You don't see Wheeler doing that. You don't see Scheifele do that. And that's not their personalities. So this is just observations to me of different characters. And when you put that into a room dynamic, that's pretty different. So going back to Hendricks, when he comes in, he can go to Laine. Not that Buff can't, but Buff does it a different way. But these guys may feel more comfortable, the younger guys, going to Hendricks than they do to Scheifele, to Wheeler, or Buff. And I'm just guessing on the personalities
I've
met.
Love. Matt Hendricks uses the word love in a dressing room quite openly.
Hey, all last year, I mean, and I marveled at it. Blake Wheeler was pissed off almost every single time he was in front of I jokingly called him Bad Mood Blake, and the more of a bad mood and angrier he sounded in the morning, the better he came out and played. But when you do that for a long time, and it's similar to coaches, the best coaches in the world get fired. They lose the ears of certain players. And I think it's been a challenge doing that all along with that driving focus for 82 games. And I think that levity of what Hendricks brings in legitimately was a need. But this goes back to something like what happened after the Minnesota game. You know, when you go through these tough times and you have someone that's always, you know, like a drill sergeant, if you will, there's probably some times where you need a bit of a different approach. And, you know, I'm fascinated to see what we see tonight and, you know, and Saturday night going into next week, if they can really come together and play for each other. Because, you know, when they do, they certainly have it in them to be one of the top teams in the league and win against anybody.
Okay, let's move on. Next question.
Jeremy Nickerson. I'm going to change gears a little bit here. Not knowing how long Brandon Tanev will be out, assuming that he's out for a round of the playoffs, at least, who would you put in his role? Would you call up Mason Appleton or even Logan Shaw? Because I don't want to have to watch Hendricks playing.
I'm a pretty strong Paralindholm advocate at this point. I think that he has the sandpaper, the penalty killing, and sort of that try-hard, not quite as talented as Perreault, but cut from that cloth in a very, like, take a few percent off of that sort of way. I think Paralindholm can be your penalty killer slash your energy guy in that sort of scenario.
Maurice said today he's pretty pleased with the group. Nobody asked specifically about Appleton. They simply asked about calling somebody up. If Tanev is out for a longer term, or even for these two, he said he's pretty comfortable with the group that they have.
No, Ken did ask about Appleton, but I know you block out anything from Ken Weeb.
Ken who?
When he comes to us. Hey, I'm Team Appleton.
It's just a rule of thumb.
I was so impressed with the way that he played when he was up with the Winnipeg Jets. I'll be honest, I was sort of stunned that he got sent back, but I guess it makes a heck of a lot more sense for him to play every night and help the Moose if he's not going to be in the lineup after the trade deadline. But I mean, we saw it. He earned the trust of the coaches. He was penalty killing at a time. So, I mean, I guess there is a particular role that, you know, maybe they're looking for in that Brandon Tanev spot, but I would have no concern whatsoever of getting Mason Appleton a shot if that was the case.
How do we not know what's wrong with Tanev? How do they not know? Like, they know.
Well, they know.
They're just not telling. So, you know,
second opinion.
I don't know. I wasn't on the road. But, I mean, the fact he's got to be flown back here. What, they don't have x-ray machines down there?
All right, I have a question.
I haven't met his dad.
What
I believe
his dad
a gentleman just told me that, is it Nashville's losing right now? Oh, 2-0.
Vancouver?
All right. There you go. All right.
Hey, Vancouver beat him this year already.
Hi, guys. It's Chris from the Jet Centric Podcast.
Woohoo! Okay, before you ask, who's your all-time favorite guest that you've ever had on it?
Kirk Kielbach.
Jesus Christ, he just totally just shaded me right in front of my face. You go sit down. Someone else has a question. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It's fabulous. We love it.
Kirk Kielbach, come on.
He's great. The voice. Yeah.
So we've been dancing around it as far as I can tell. We're talking about lack of leadership. We're talking about poor penalty killing. I've noticed all year dump and chase game. What's it going to take? What's the status? What is everybody's take on the coach? Because I think a lot of people think that he's not doing a job, pardon me, with a roster that is loaded.
Standings, Chris.
I mean, well, that's the thing. I mean, if you look at the last 2 years, it's pretty hard to say. I mean, I think last year this team, I mean, who had them second overall in the NHL? Nobody. And you know, as Rick pointed out, you know, at Christmas time, everything was pretty much going according to plan. We have seen a serious drop off, and whether that's the law of diminishing returns, that is not a theory, it is a law. I mean, that we could be seeing that right now. You know, we were kind of joking off air going through. I mean, hey, the guy's coached 1,500 games. He's got an incredible amount of experience. He's been through a lot of situations. This one, though, is a little different. And, you know, it would be naive to not think that could be part of it. Now, they can make this entire conversation moot by playing well and going in and doing something in the playoffs. But there's absolutely no doubt that, as it usually does, it trickles downhill, and it will start with a head coach if things flame out early in the postseason.
Yeah, I think that microscope is coming, at least I read my apps, I see the comments, I do all that sort of stuff, and on a daily basis I talk to people who either think Paul Maurice is the greatest NHL coach that exists or the absolute worst one. And
well, you are in Winnipeg.
So I don't know. My opinion, if you want the ramble or the rant, is that there's so many things that go into being a head coach that I'm not sure. Here's what I really want to say is I read every day losingest NHL coach in history, and I think that's such bullshit. I think you can't judge a pitcher by wins if he doesn't get hitting. I don't think you can judge a goaltender by wins if he doesn't get offense sort of things. And I think for the last couple of seasons with Connor Hellebuyck, it might be the first time that Paul Maurice has ever had an above average NHL goaltender. I'm not really looking at his record as an indication of whether he's a good or a bad coach. I look at perhaps record relative to expectations, what star players say, what communication is like, and things like that. So there's a whole bunch of different factors I would look at. And there's a lot of people inside that Jets room who, when we're talking about other things that have nothing to do with Paul Maurice, will invoke his name as somebody that they admire and respect and have changed certain things for them. And you hear that a lot. That's one thing that's going well. Has he adapted well? Have the Jets split up Scheifele and Wheeler? Have they fixed the penalty kill? Are there other sorts of things? You can point at those, and you can definitely make the argument that Winnipeg's underperforming relative to its probably top five talent that it has. Does that make me feel pitchforks or anything like that? No, it really doesn't, but it sort of puts me thinking that maybe there's a middle tier that he would fall into, and communication and quips are something he does exceptionally well. There's a lot of respect for him in that room. Has he adapted? Are there better options? Probably yes, too. So that's a very middling fence sort of answer, and I think that the more that they underperform their expectations, the more that we're going to have to talk about that.
Well, if they lose in the first round and get off to a tough start next year, watch this really ramp up.
No, that's true.
Well, I mean, hey, let's not forget, and I sort of made the comparison of where we're at right now after this closed-door meeting after Game 80 with two games left in the regular season to the way a lot of people were feeling around the club two games into last season. I mean, huge expectations after missing the playoffs. An embarrassing ass-kicking by the Leafs of all teams in the home opener. And then going to Calgary and blowing a 2-0 lead, and the roof caved in, and it seemed like the team had no confidence. They were right back to where they were at the lowest point. And then things turned around. I mean, let's face it, two more losses like that at the start of next year, and, I mean, there would have been a change. I have no doubt about that. So we've seen things go up like this. They've kind of gone down, and where things go from here, I think, will ultimately determine both the short and particularly long-term future of the team, but also the guy running it.
Okay, we're going to get to the next question soon, but I have a quick question for everyone because I'm just interested in this. Full disclosure, I'm going to say this tomorrow when I'm on CJOB doing my sports stuff. How many of you right now feel the Winnipeg Jets will get upset in the first round? Okay, all right. So still everybody has faith. Lots of people have faith. Okay, I just wanted to see. Because we're so negative here tonight. All right, sir, stand
up. Would it
up.
Even be an upset?
If we ever Well, technically, in this league, there's no real upsets, in my little opinion, because I think every team is pretty solid.
I mean, they could finish third and start on the road.
Yeah, that's true.
My name's Tyler. My question's back to Tanev. I get a lot of entertainment out of watching him. I think he's a great player for the Jets. If Paul Lindholm does slot in, he does a lot of the defensive stuff that Tanev does do right now, but he had 2 goals in 62 games with the Leafs in a deep roster. If Tanev goes into, I believe, free agency this summer, how do the Jets keep him and can they afford him?
I think that Brandon Tanev is one of those. He's a prime candidate to be a headache for the GM this summer, and it's because this offense has sort of come out of nowhere in a way. There's the highlight reel skating.
Funny how that happens in a contract year, isn't it? Caution every GM out there to read that last year of a contract where a player does a jump in goals and hand him too much money and see how that works for you.
Well, yeah, I think that's the risk that Winnipeg runs exactly with him, is that perhaps relative to his slot in the order and what you might expect from him true talent-wise, I think that he's on fire offensively and everything's gone in. And, like, I want fans to be entertained, and I love the speed and the heart and the tenacity and all those sorts of things, but I think it's going to be very easy to overpay him relative to how much he helps the team win this summer, and depending on what that number comes in on, I think that he might be a walk candidate so you can pay some of the other people.
He was huge for the Jets in the playoffs last year. Let's remember that.
Oh, pay him. Pay him.
No, but so I'm just saying, safely. It's not like he just performs in a contract year. He was very big for them last year.
Pay him. I wouldn't give him the money. I think you can replace those kind of players relatively easier. He's not a fourth line player, but you're not.
So Rick, what's his cost?
Six.
I mean, when you say pay him, I'm not talking pay him tons of money. I'm just saying, you know, what would you?
Oh,
want
but
to pay
they
him?
Need every dollar they can get this summer. I think the way now it depends on what line he does here. Maybe in the last two games or in the playoffs, but they've got a number of issues that they're looking at, including Morrissey in another year, Trouba this year again. And then you've got line 8 specifically, and what's the other guy? Connor. So.
And then you have your defense.
It just there's not enough money, I don't think, to go around. And on a year, what's he going to get on the open market? Will he get somebody give him $3 million?
I'd say 2.5, maybe.
That's
I think somebody will, and I think he will take it.
Yeah, well, and he should. You know, if I were him, I would. But I don't know that the Winnipeg Jets should offer it.
Yeah, if that's the number they're talking about from another team, I mean, it's very difficult for the Jets to even consider matching it or going there. I mean, he may think that he's got a spot wherever the team and the organization believes in him and gives him what he thinks a fair deal for more years and stay. But let's face it, you only have one opportunity. You maybe just only have one opportunity to be an unrestricted free agent and to cash in on the greatest performance of your career. Pretty hard to blame him or the team, really, if they go their separate ways, as popular as he's become.
Yeah. All right, another question here.
Hi. So I have a question about the goaltending, but it's not really the goaltending. It's the systems and stuff. Rick actually tweeted that Hellebuck had allowed the most shots in the NHL at one point. He's still leading. This was a couple weeks ago. And Comrie in the AHL leads the league in shots against. That's probably changed now that he's been up for
a couple
weeks.
It's amazing, quite frankly.
So why? Like, what's wrong?
Why?
Is it the defense? Like, can you guys break it down? Is it the defensive system? It probably is. Like, how do they fix that? Allowing a lot of shots, probably not a good thing.
You know what I find surprising, and we've spoken to Pascal Vincent this year as well, and he's okay with the shots that Comrie's facing because they're from the outside. And we've heard Paul Maurice go, well, yeah, the shot count was 40 or 53 against Montreal, but most of them were from the outside. Here's the thing about a goaltender, right? 53 shots against Montreal hits him. He wasn't standing like this.
That's a
as they hit him, right? He's in his crouch or he's gone down on his knees and he's made the save. 53 times he's done that. Now, if there's a shot attempt but it doesn't get through and you're in the offensive zone, what's the goaltender doing? He's in his crouch. Go across the blue line, come over here. Come back over here, down into the corner, off the post, over the other post, come back out. Stay like this, do this for 45 seconds, and then straighten up and they go, now you got to get back in. Now there's a shot. Now there's two shots. My point is, if there's 70 shot attempts in a game, your goaltender is crouched and ready. And that's a strain on the legs. Now they're in pretty good shape. But when you are getting the most shots in the National Hockey League that are hitting you, and you don't have the best save percentage, look at the shot attempts as well, and look at the zone time that's being spent in the Winnipeg Jets zone. And you've got a goaltender that is working his ass off this year, more so to me than any other goaltender in the National Hockey League. It looks to me tiring. And Comrie's doing the same thing in the American Hockey League.
All right. With that, as everyone can see, Mr. Dennis Bayak is up on the screen. One more time, the socks are in the back, as are $20 for these, as are some buttons. Murat Itesh, Huss, and Rick Ralph from the Afternoon Ride on TSN 1290. I'm Leah Hextall, and I hope you guys enjoy the hockey game. Let's hope the boys can clinch 2 points today. Thank you so much. Thank you to the Park Theater for having us, and please come around and chat. Thank you.